Welcome to Temple of Health Radio Show. This is Dr. Susan Kolb, and today I'm pleased to have as my guest Gail Hamilton, the author of The Dirt Committee. As you know, I have been involved in the breast implant controversy for, probably 30 years or so, and wrote a book called The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, and am active in helping women recover from this disease due to the chemical silicone and biotoxicity. Biotoxicity is usually from mold and bacteria. Silicone toxicity is, silicone is a chemical, so, but it's a special chemical because it can cause certain problems in people with certain genetic and genetic problems. But the majority of what is wrong with breast implants falls under chemical toxicity. And Gail's book, The Dirt Committee, talks about what went on at Dow Corning, Dow Chemical, what went on with the chemicals behind this controversy, and what was the cover-up from the chemical companies, the FDA, and other agencies that were supposed to be responsible but ended up not being responsible in this whole thing. And I really appreciate her book. She's been very ill with the effects of silicone and these chemicals, and despite that has written a very, very well-researched book with great information on the adverse effect of silicone, especially the chemicals such as platinum and some of the carcinogenic chemicals that are in the gel. That basically the PR from Dow Chemical and Dow Corning was able to cover this up because everything was on the silicone. Everything, they only talked about the silicone. The chemicals were discussed in back rooms, and the FDA was assured that there was no problem with the platinum, even though it's a very, very toxic heavy metal. So there's a lot of, you have to educate yourself about this problem, and unfortunately, hundreds of thousands of women are still getting breast implants without adequate informed consent. And that's why we're having this discussion today. Gail, thank you for joining us. Where are you calling in from?
I'm calling in from Ontario, Canada. And I'd like to thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to discuss my book. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
I read your book as well. And was very impressed too. So,
well, my book's more about the clinical side of things. What the women need to do to get well. And your book is a real good summary and with real good detail points on what actually went on, especially within the companies.
An Erin Brockovich kind of
there you go. It is, yeah.
I think that's what it's been, yeah. That's what I've been told. Thank you.
So, tell our listening audience what the Dirt Committee stands for.
Okay. DIRT stands for Document Investigation and Review Team. And that was a team that Dow set up within their executives just shortly before the FDA was they had a court demand that they were going to get all Dow's documents. So just before that, they set up a team called Document Investigation and Review Team. And these executives frantically went through all their incriminating documents and all documents, and it was a huge job. They obviously missed some, and those are the ones that I have been able to use in my book. And they even talk about the formation of the Dirt Committee, and they didn't destroy that document. I have one document that talks about they're working nights and weekends. Much has been done, but there's still much to do. And let's see. Anyway, that's the
Title of it, right?
The title of it, and that's what the book is based on, all these documents that missed the purge. And
right.
There are 9 million of them in a storage room in Alabama, and those documents were gone through by Diana Pendleton's law group, and they sourced these 562 incredible, jaw-dropping documents. And it's when I started reading these in the about 2000 that I came to understand that I had lived this whole nightmare. And every once in a while, I read a document that I realized applied directly to me. And I thought, oh, that's what happened to me back then. When my implants didn't heal after 10 days, the sutures broke open. And then I found out in one of the documents that Dow was having a problem with greasy implants, and that they had decided that the grease on the implants contaminated the incision going in, and therefore the incision wouldn't heal, and the scar would, or the incision would break down, the stitches would break down, and the implants would come out. And rather than go back to the drawing table and get these implants so that they weren't greasy, and some doctors said they thought they had soaked them in Mazola oil, they then instructed their sales group to before each time that they showed their implants to surgeons, that they would take a rag and some alcohol, go to the nearest washroom with a rag and some alcohol, and wipe these down before showing to the next. And we're relatively sure the surgeon won't notice the oil on the implant, that sort of thing. And I hope when I randomly recite some of these documents to you, in the book, they're well documented. Who said who made the comment, and how it reflected in my own life. But that's one issue only in the whole book that my jaw dropped. I thought,
there was what happened. There was one document that I was going to try to quote in The Naked Truth About Breast Implants, but I had trouble finding it, although I had it referred to earlier in probably multiple things. But it was a document that said, from the animal studies, all we have to do is wait long enough and the women will all be dead. Do you remember that document? Because that's one that I think we need to put.
Yeah,
that really says it all.
I didn't quite recall that one. I have one that says women die every day of strange. All women die eventually, and women die every day of strange and unusual things. No one will connect it to our implants.
Right.
That was a telling document. The other one was, if we wait long enough, we don't have the money to do more research. If we wait long enough, the medical community will figure it out for us. So we should wait and see. Yeah, there was that.
Well, there's different categories I want to outline for our listeners, and then we can talk about the different categories. But one of the categories, of course, is lack of informed consent for the women. Animal studies were done. Results were covered up. They weren't favorable for the product,
right.
So they were covered up.
Mm-hmm.
Dog studies, rat studies, injection studies, there's all sorts of studies. We can talk about them. But the big issue is lack of informed consent for the consumer. Dow Corning put out in its brochure that these implants would last a lifetime, and that's what the consumer got. It sold gel to other companies and covered up the defects and perpetuated the idea that this gel was safe. And then the idea that the gel was in different batches, and different batches had different problems, and the chemicals were not even the same batch to batch, that kind of thing, that you weren't getting a standard safe product. You weren't even getting a standard product. There were some real horrible gels that were produced with real high levels of platinum and other chemicals, carcinogens.
Absolutely.
So lack of informed consent from the patient. Lack of informed consent to the plastic surgeons. You have a number of plastic surgeons, Dr. Hartley, I know personally, in Atlanta, who wrote letters complaining about the gel bleed. I was actually putting in silicone implants back then. I know about the gel bleed. Mm-hmm. I waited until 1985 when Dow Corning came out with the low bleed because I was very concerned not only about the bleed, but also about the rupture rate of the 70s implants. You were putting them in and they would rupture easily. I mean, I actually was a surgeon doing that. Mm-hmm. So I was not willing to put these in me until something safer than those 70 implants were around. The polyurethane, basically they told the doctors the polyurethane coating was safe. And you said in your book that your surgeon tried to put those back in you. Thank God you didn't have them because polyurethane are some of my sickest patients. That polyurethane dissolves. It's no longer on the market because, of course, it dissolves into something that was a known carcinogen. So basically, you know, the polyurethane was a disaster. And then...
And Bristol-Myers, excuse me,
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but Bristol-Myers, again, in their psychopathic attitude, just said, well, time will tell. We'll see. And yet knowing this was a carcinogen. Yeah. Excuse me for interrupting you.
Oh, no, no, that's fine. Now, Bristol-Myers has some interesting details just with that company. I'm not going to reveal them on air, but I'll reveal them to you personally. that company is may have more ethical dilemmas than Dow Corning does. But in any case, so there was lack of informed consent to the plastic surgeons. The scientist who tried to do work and publish it, Dr. Blaise in Canada, lost his job at Health Canada. Another doctor I was reading about that you wrote in here, you might be able to tell me his name.
Dr. Patton.
Yeah, he was run out of his business.
Sure was.
You might, go ahead and tell the audience a little bit about his story. I'm not as familiar with his story. Of course, I know Dr. Blaise personally, so I know his story really well.
And I do. Yeah, I do as well.
Right.
But Dr. Patton, he worked originally with Jarrow and Cronin, who began the implant business in the early days, and he was a neurologist at Bayer. Just a minute, Baylor. Excuse me,
Baylor. Yeah, right.
And so when the women started getting sick from the implants, Cronin and Jarrow would send. He, being the neurologist, would send them to him. And then when he started connecting the dots and realizing it was the implants that were making these women so sick, he basically was blackballed. There was a campaign against him. It reminded me of the that movie where the dead rabbit. And the, just a minute. In... He was just bombarded legally by his peers.
Wasn't his office broken into?
His law office was broken into. His files were all gone through.
Right.
By the time he just quit. He just had to finally step aside, and he said, "You know, it's just not worth it." But
Let me share with you a couple of things that happened with me that were very interesting. One was I got a phone call while I was actually in surgery from a toxicologist at Wayne State that Dr. Halbert, you may have heard of him. He published the information on platinum. He did some studies on platinum and published it in the Israeli Journal of Occupational Health. It wasn't even a U.S. medical journal. He basically tested these women for platinum sensitivity that had implants.
Right.
And he told me that I've been on either CNN or Fox National News, I don't know, one of the national news things, talking about platinum. Mm-hmm. And he called me up and he says, "Susan, you need to quit talking about platinum. They paid no less than $40 million to keep that quiet." And I'm going, "Really?" Evidently, the platinum stuff is what they really wanted to keep quiet, and they kept it quiet by paying at least, he said, no less than $4 million each time they settled. So they would settle the cases and then seal them so that nobody could say anything. And he knew that because he was involved in the litigation. and as an expert witness for the women.
Right.
Of course, you know, I mean, I have no proof that this is true. However, it was interesting that he warned me to stay off of national TV talking about platinum. Of course, I put it in my book, so that's one thing.
Uh-huh.
But I was at a press conference in Washington in the 90s, and we were doing the PR thing, you know, to counteract the PR thing that Dow was doing, and we need to talk about that later because that's real interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And Barbara Boxer was there along with some of the celebrities who were speaking out against breast implants. Mary, I think, do you remember Little House on the Prairie? Mary somebody.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't remember all their names. But at the end of the press conference, Barbara Boxer came up and put her arm around me and said, "My dear, you are very brave." I love that story. Isn't that great? I had no idea. I was just like really ignorant at that point that anything could happen to me. I just have a lot of spiritual protection. So people do kind of warn me. They come out of the woodwork and warn me, like Dr. Halbert did, about what, you know, what are the things that they want to cover up. One's platinum, and of course the other is the effect on the children born of women with ruptured implants. And I knew P.J. Brent personally. And PJ had an interesting story. Well, let me tell it. I'll tell the story. PJ wanted me to be an expert witness at her trial involving Bristol Myers Squibb. Okay. PJ had four children, two before she ruptured and two after. And her daughter was actually my patient. I actually sewed her up over at Scottish Rite. And then she came to me for a while for her neurological problems. She had vast neurological problems. She couldn't walk down the hall without, you know, going all over the place.
Wow.
So PJ was not my patient, but her daughter was. And basically, PJ called me up wanting me to be an expert witness. And, you know, being an expert witness can be dangerous. So I said, PJ, I can't really be an expert witness, but if you come see me as a patient, I can be your doctor, treating physician witness. Okay. And this was, I think it was around Memorial Day 2001, if I remember correctly. It may be 2000. I can't remember. But anyway, I talked to her that week. The next, about a week or two later, was a trial. And I know it was Memorial Day. Her husband said she went out to get donuts for the family, and she was found having jumped off the top of Perimeter Mall parking garage, which is less than a mile away from here. Well, you can't get donuts at the mall, okay? Her husband, who I did a radio show with later on, told me privately that he did not think she committed suicide. And Kathy Keithley Johnson of Toxic Discovery, you know Kathy, told me that she had talked to PJ a couple of weeks prior, or a month prior, I don't know, and PJ had said she would never commit suicide. PJ was very spiritual. She was not suicide prone. She had children that she loved. She had family. Her family was very important to her. And the other thing is, she wasn't depressed. When I talked to her, she wasn't depressed at all. She was looking forward to her trial. But she wouldn't settle. Money didn't mean that much to PJ, as you know, because you know what she did for the women. And she was a staunch advocate for the children. Now, this is very interesting. This is very interesting. You will love this. I had a front desk supervisor working for me who said to me, my ex-husband was an assassin for the NSA, and he now works for Bristol-Myers Squibb. Why would an implant company need to hire an assassin?
Okay.
Now, this is the first time I've publicly said this.
I don't want to turn this into a gossip fest, but I've got to tell you, I recently had a very long conversation with Pierre Blais, and we were talking about Jean-Claude Mass of the PIP implants and Don McGahn, who is in jail now for money laundering. And Pierre Blais told me that in both the Mass manufacturing plant and Don McCann's group, there have been up to five mysterious deaths, and he went on to list them and what happened. And he said, you've got to remember, these are multi-billion dollar entities.
Right.
And I told him he needs to write a book, but, you know, you can't pin anything down, but it just brought that conversation back to mind. That's
well, needless to say, I don't publish anything, because when you publish something, you become a Daubert witness, and you know about that.
Right.
Andrew Campbell, who was the head of the journal, he was the editor of the journal published in the mid-90s on silicone toxicity, and I always laugh when doctors tell me that silicone can't cause toxicity, and I say, well, then how come the toxicologist published an entire journal on it in the mid-90s? Andrew actually called me up wanting me to publish something on saline implants with mold, and I said, Andrew, you know, you really just want me to get a bullet in my head? You know, like, is that what you want? And he said, oh, no, you're right. You're doing a lot of good helping the women. Just don't worry about that. So when your doctor asks you why didn't Dr. Kolb publish anything, or why didn't any of the other doctors that helped the women publish anything, there's reasons. You know, I mean,
well, I know
the parameters. You know,
yeah, and I felt it too. Nothing direct, but after investigating what's gone on here, I mentioned to my sister a couple times, you know, if you find me dead in a ditch, you know what happened.
Yeah.
But, you know, sort of said it with tongue in cheek, but anyway, I certainly don't feel
well.
There is
some danger in certain activities that would cost them a great deal of money. Those activities would be publishing certain papers, because then it can be used in court. Our job, you know, Gail and I have a job, which is basically informed consent of the women. I mean, that's really what we want to do, so that the women considering implants, either cosmetic or reconstructive, or even any implant. I mean, it can be a chin, cheek, it doesn't matter, because the number of people who get sick from a small amount of silicone being implanted in, because it's an HLA reaction. And so it's not anything that they're going to know unless they know that certain genetic types that are also predisposed to other autoimmune diseases. It can, but, you know, insurance doesn't pay for those tests a lot of times, so it's really expensive. So, you know, it's really, there's reasons why those implant books say don't implant anybody with a family history of autoimmune disease. But, I mean, if somebody wanted to pay for the test, they could. I mean, it's true, but the problem is there's multiple HLA types, some predisposed to silicone toxicity and some predisposed to biotoxin disease. So you really have to do ask people if they've had fibromyalgia, because most people have been exposed to mold at one time or another, or if they've, you know, if they have a family history or personal history of autoimmune disease, and then I tell them it's not a good idea to get implants, you know. I mean, just in general, you know. But if somebody really wants implants, they need to consider these things.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
That's true. They do need to do that. And you would think it would make sense to the insurance companies to pretest, because what they're going to end up with in the aftermath is, I know the study done in Canada say that implanted women take up to 4 times the healthcare services than unimplanted women. So that's a quote from Dr. Blay.
That's, you know, Canada and other European countries with socialized medicine are in a unique position
to
study this. That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's really not been done in the U.S. I mean, even there was never a registry of women getting the implants, so they had to do ads in newspapers and things like that to even get people into the settlement. So a lot of people never really knew about the settlement because they just didn't read those venues and watch TV. And
that settlement is well explained in my book. And, you know,
it is.
People thought women got big money, and women were saying they were sick for money and blah, blah, blah.
It was a PR
spin. The raw truth.
It was a PR spin by the PR company hired by Dow Corning.
sure it was. And the sad thing is, the other side of the story doesn't have the funding to counteract the PR spin that the companies are spending all these millions on. So it's only the little guys like you and like me, and we're trying to get this the truth out there. Dr. Mercola, I watched that interview with Dr. Mercola and you. That was just excellent. I love him, and so he's doing his best, but it's a uphill battle.
Well, you know, as I say in my book, a lot of this has to do with one's intuition. A lot of women who've come to me for explantation said that before they ever got implanted, they had an intuition this wasn't a good idea. And they might be doing it to save a marriage, which actually doesn't work very well, to please somebody else, to, you know, to regain something that they lost with pregnancy. That was, I think, your case.
Yes.
Or in my case, I never developed breasts. And I was actually spiritually guided to get breast implants. And I was spiritually guided to get Dow Corning. And thank God, because I got like $25,000 out of the settlement. You know, any other brand, I wouldn't have done that. But, yeah, the idea is that you have to follow your intuition at all times. You know, your intuition really can protect you. And if you do get into a bad situation, your intuition can get you out of it. So that was the...
Right. I learned that too late in life, but... It's so true.
It's so true.
If young people can, just follow their gut instinct and which is their intuition and go with it, they'll make better decisions in life. But sometimes we try to overrule, let our brain overrule.
Well, one of the really big problems is that silicone implants have been put back on the market as of 2006, and the majority of people, including just about all the doctors, believe that since the FDA put them back on the market, they must be safe. You want to address that?
Well, the second round is getting sick as we speak.
They're my patients currently.
Right.
I can vouch for that.
Jeff Condra, who was the liaison attorney in Birmingham, was the liaison attorney between plaintiffs and Dow Corning, and he's in charge of the storage facility that Dow and the plaintiffs share the cost, and that story's told in another chapter. And I passed the rough copy of my book to him as I was writing it, and he said, he told me about 5 years ago, he said, this book will become interesting when this next wave of women start to get sick.
Mm-hmm.
So that was his theory, and you know, I thought when the PIP scandal hit that it would make people sit up and take notice.
No, that was blamed on a certain kind of silicone. And I kept saying, no, I mean, yeah, this silicone is worse, but there were also batches that were really, really bad in the 70s and other batches that went bad that caused the same problem.
Yes.
It's not a new story. It's not just one person, but they really separated that out to make sure that people thought that was a special case.
Mm-hmm.
That's true. Well, there's a study by that was funded by Mentor that the Mentor rep showed me comparing the new silicone implants, Mentor versus Allergan. And she was very proud of the fact that Mentor's leaked less platinum. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, I didn't know they put platinum back in these.
Well.
They both leak. They just leak less.
They call it proprietary information. And I was talking to Sue Maharaj and Dr. Lakaiza, and they both assured me that platinum was still in the new gummy bears and the new...
We have a paper stating that. I mean, it's on the internet if you want to get it. It's not hidden at all. But so platinum, the platinum issue is an interesting one. The FDA claims, because of certain research, that this platinum is harmless. But other people, like Lyrica and other doctors, claim that that's just not true, because in the human body, things are changed around all the time. Into other things. So, the fact that the platinum is in the implants at all is crazy after everything that's happened. It really is. PJ Brent, I want to go back to PJ Brent for a minute.
All right.
Her attorney called me with her autopsy report and said that she was really, really sick from platinum, really sick. And that her two children with the, with the neurological problems, also had platinum, but the two children before the implants ruptured did not have platinum. So the evidence is there.
Oh, of course. Well, I'm just scrolling through my manuscript, and I've just come up with one statement that I've got here. It says, platinum is considered such a health hazard that the U.S. Occupational Safety and Health Administration set one of its strictest workplace exposure thresholds for the toxin, 2 parts per billion. There's more than that. In my ingredients list in the book, it shows platinum and the percentage that's in some of the different proprietary ingredients list that Dow had in their documents. And Dr. Majera and Lakaiza both say that there's still a reactive form of platinum after the implants have been cured, because I think what the implant manufacturers are trying to say, once the implants are cured, and this is a heat curing system that they use, that some of these toxins disappear. But according to studies, the platinum still shows up in the urine even of women with implants.
It shows up in the hair analysis. I do clinically, if a woman has these weird neurological symptoms, new onset adult asthma, and lipomas. Lipomas are the body's way of sealing off the platinum, multiple lipomas. And there's others, but those are the ones I look for. I always do a hair analysis, and then I'll see the platinum on the hair analysis. That's a good way to do it, because urine only gets one point in time, whereas hair gets much more. And then we have a specific platinum detox that we do as well, which, you know, people ask me whether or not these detoxes work. You know, I think it depends on whether or not the women follow through with them, whether or not what we're actually eliminating and how long it takes to eliminate that. But in general, women who do the detox programs do a lot better than women who forego them. And
what about
that would
chelation
make sense.
Therapy?
Well, chelation might be good for certain heavy metals, but you know, I don't know if anybody's ever done a study on it. It's more for lead and that kind of heavy metal. I use foot baths, the electrolysis foot bath for the hydrophobic chemicals and the ionic foot bath for the hydrophilic chemicals. And then, if you study detoxification, which is a part of functional medicine, depending on what you're trying to detox, there's certain ways that work better than others. So we try to determine what is the big problem. And I group it into silicone, because there's specific detox for silicone that, like, Dr. Shanklin came up with inositol. And then you can do liquid needle gold body soaks. That gets silicone out through the skin, which is handy. Dr. Staninger in California came up with some other interesting non-oral programs for silicone. So, you know, and then chemicals, which most people have the chemical toxicity. I mean, most people have the chemical, and it's like silicone's part of it, but it's when the chemical, and it's when this stuff starts to leak out or rupture, and that's where most people get sick. And then some people have biotox. I think one rheumatologist told me he tested 3,000 women for candidiasis with ruptured implants, and 3,000 had candidiasis. So it's kind of like AIDS. If you have AIDS, you're going to have yeast. You know, they just keep AIDS patients on Diflucan. So many of the women get much better once I treat them with antifungals, but I have to decide if they have more yeast or mold, and often they have both, because some antifungals are better for yeast, some are better for mold. So each patient is very individual. You have to, we use applied kinesiology muscle testing, because we don't have the information on the sensitivities, you know, which antifungals are going to work best. We use, a lot of functional medicine, a lot of, stuff that is really for detoxification. And that's the antifungal, and then the immune system. We try to get the immune system up with supplements. so that we reverse the T-cell deficiency. The T-cell deficiency is maybe part of the reason, along with the carcinogens, that the women have a high rate of cancer, and that's in your book, and it's in my book, too. Mm-hmm. It's not breast cancer. Actually, breast cancer is lowered. But it's lung cancer, brain cancer, vulvar cancer, pancreatic, and I think it's probably it's more than that now. I think that some of the carcinogens, as we know, probably don't even do anything for 10 to 20 years. So, and I don't think the studies went out that far. So I think the further you go out with the studies, the more you're going to see, kind of like tobacco and lung cancer. You know, you got to really longer than 20 years.
That's right. And, of course, we know that the Mayo and Harvard Brigham studies skewed their numbers by using people that had implants as short a time as 2 months. And
a lot of women don't have trouble for 10 years. I mean, the engineering data says that the shell doesn't get leaky through a lipolysis reaction. This is Dow Corning data. It doesn't get leaky until 8 to 15 years. And that's really when most of the women start having problems. I've seen over 2,000 women with this problem. I mean, we basically know the clinical presentations. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, women who come here, on average, go to between 10, and one of my patients went to 99 doctors before she found me. She counted them. Mm-hmm. Most of them said she was going to die. They didn't know what she had, but they said, you're going to die. She was deathly ill. And now she's fine. You know, she's fine. She's gained weight. She no longer looks like she came out of a concentration camp. She, there's so many doctors that call me up. I've had pulmonologists call me up and say, this misdiagnosed, or well, maybe diagnosed correctly, we don't know, but really bad pulmonary diseases, told they were going to die. I explant them, detox them, and their lungs are okay. I mean, their pulmonary functions are normal. They want to publish a paper. And I go, well, you know, we can't publish papers, sorry. We can't tell the world we're doing this because, I just can't. I know intuitively I can't publish papers. Cardiologists that I work with say, we need to publish a paper. These women, after you explant them, all their arrhythmias go away. The biotoxin, especially next to the left implant, and the chemical toxins hit the heart, especially in submuscular position.
Right.
Weird. Well,
I stepped off the curb with this
stuff.
Book because, I've just thrown caution to the wind, and it's all in. The
it's
dirt
all
committee,
in there.
As you well know. You,
it
you
is.
Well know.
It
and
is.
You know how sick I was with the, seizures and the, the just incredible, strange, my breathing stopped, and it would didn't realize I had stopped breathing, but then all of a sudden my lungs would fill up, just about knock me off the sofa, and never heard of such a strange thing, that neither had any of my doctors. And so neurologically, it was a nightmare. And that's why it took me so long to write the book. I spent 5 years writing this book. And I think as the cognitive issues got better, then I was able to concentrate more and get this book down on paper. But it does skip around a little bit.
I think you did a great job considering the cognitive issues. I mean, it's really well done.
It was a lot of research.
It was.
If anything is hearsay, I would mention it. And I don't. The only thing I think that I said was hearsay was one of Dr. Blaze conversations to me that said when the mixture didn't look just right, when they were mixing up the filler for the implants, they'd throw a handful of this or that into the mix until it appeared to be right. And I really didn't have any better reference than that, but I think I did. I even put it in as hearsay, basically there's 180, over 180 references in this book, so it's well documented and well researched. But and my story, is told. I intercept the book every once in a while to go back to what was happening in my life during a certain time, and then when a document like the silicone getting into, what is that one? Oh dear, mind freeze. They were checking the animals anyway, and they had silicone in all of their organs including
yeah.
the brain, crosses the blood-brain barrier.
It does,
but,
yeah.
Possibly that's how my breathing and everything got so confused, was my body didn't know.
Yeah, there's neurotoxin chemicals in the gel mix, as
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the thing that silicone causes problems with the myelin sheaths that you know. And then there's
right.
a biotoxin that forms from the mold. See, the silicone migrated all over your body, but then it's like a foreign
right.
body, and it can get
right.
It can get surrounded with mold. You have pictures
mm-hmm.
of that. You can even get mold in your sinuses, mold in your chest wall, mold in your gut.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wherever it's there.
And I have
the
diaphragm
wall.
Patches.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have the diaphragm patches.
And yeah, and you didn't have your capsules out initially, so you got death wheel afterwards, which is what happened to me, too. And then, did you ever get your capsules out?
They had calcified and shrunk, and once I got that siliconoma out 8 years after my explant, it wasn't until then that I started to recover at all. And
did they take
those
capsules out at the same time they took the siliconoma out?
No.
Yeah, because it's important to get those capsules out. Yeah,
I know.
It really is.
I know.
It's very important.
I've just, you know, had so much. I just don't want to.
Well, a lot of people get deathly ill. You know, they get deathly ill.
Oh, I know.
And can't. But I'll tell you what works to get people well. Getting the capsules out, getting the siliconomas out, and getting any enlarged lower axillary lymph nodes out, because the sentinel nodes
right.
gather up the silicone, and it's usually in the lower axilla, but these nodes can be giant. They can be like 5 centimeters across.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important. Once we get all that out and then do the detox, the women get a lot better.
That underarm pain is what was telling me that it was in my lymph nodes. My underarm
felt
right. like I was being stabbed with an ice pick.
Right.
It sounds a little drastic, but it is drastic.
Well, no, it does. It's
a
neurological stabbing pain. That's what all my patients describe. Mm-hmm. I want to go
my
back one
numb.
Minute.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Well, numbness is a big part. I mean, I have numbness in my hands that I have to shake out frequently because of this, you know, worse on the left than the right. But, fortunately, it hasn't affected the motor aspect. That's what it does second. But in any case, the Dow Corning judge, Judge Pointer, he was appointed
right.
to oversee the Dow Corning settlement. I learned something new. I didn't know that. You want to tell our listening audience about what happened with him? That's very interesting.
Well, Judge Sam Pointer retired abruptly in April 2000. He's now passed on. Recently, a couple of years ago. But his staff read about his departure only through an internet posting.
Uh-huh.
And Judge Pointer, it was found out, accepted a position as legal counsel for Franklin Lightfoot and White, a firm that defends big corporations from litigation. Their client list is Dow AgriSciences, LLC, co-owner of Dow Corning, Merck, Bristol-Myers, Squibb. And this guy was in charge of the Dow Corning settlement.
Right.
Thank you very much.
It reminds me of a saying, a good attorney knows the law, a great attorney knows the judge. So what do you think? It makes you wonder, doesn't it?
Uh-huh. Oh,
it does.
I was just amazed. So during the writing of this book and my research, I just, I learned as I went along, too. And it was such an interesting process and journey for me to have these, it's like shock therapy when I read some of these things. I go,
yeah, really?
What?
What?
What? Yeah, yeah. But
well, people need to
funny.
Read your book because there is so much in it that is just educational. You do correlate it to other disasters, you know, the dioxin, the other chemical disasters, the other cover-ups.
Agent Orange.
Agent, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
you know, you have to understand that this is not an isolated cover-up. This is very much pattern and practice of the corporate entities that, not getting into conspiracy theory, but I believe those corporate entities actually let the governments know what to do. The revolving door policy of our FDA with Taylor in charge of it now. He used to be the vice president of Monsanto and the lead counselor for Monsanto. Good Lord. Mm-hmm. How can that
be? And you
be?
Know, I wrote this book while I was, told about it as I wrote this book. I was living with my sister. Of course, I lost my career, my family, everything. Everything went due to this illness, so I was living with my sister. And I was writing this book on my laptop in my brother-in-law had passed away from Agent Orange poisoning, and he flew helicopters in the Vietnam War, and he told me that there was no door on the helicopter, and he just flew through clouds of the stuff, and right at the latency, expected latency period, he got non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, and he passed away. So we certainly have Dow shadow over our family.
Yeah, and you have a very good, it's on page 183, a little thing on corporate homicide. It says, did you know that corporate crime inflicts far more damage on society than all street crime combined? And you know, this is really true. Our surge in breast and prostate cancer, our surge in cancer in general, especially lymphoma, lymphoma and leukemia are very, very much connected to chemical toxicity. You know, there are direct chemical exposures that lead to that. And as is breast cancer, there was a story I read the other day about how common male breast cancer was in this Marines who swam in a certain lake at their training camp, and this lake was used for toxic chemicals. Well, something as rare as male breast cancer, when you see a surge of it, there's a chemical component. So, yes, it's true that, you know, too much estrogen can lead to breast cancer in women, but the chemical component, I think, is probably always there.
Well, so, I have some friends who are farmers, and they have male breast cancer. The father and son both have had an incidence of male breast cancer. So,
well, look to chemicals. Look to chemicals.
And,
many of the chemicals that were used when we were young, I imagine you're about the same age as I am, are no longer allowed to be used. So we were definitely exposed to them, you know, either in non-organic food or, you know, just going down a country road in your car with the door, with the window open. We used to do that before air conditioning, And seeing those dusters, you know, I grew up in Kansas. They had dusters all over the place. So we know we got exposed. And then there's the radiation component, too. Radiation was a big component, getting mammograms every 6 months, you know, that kind of thing.
I wanted to mention
that in the journal, in one of the Journal of Radiology, there's an article saying that if women get the normal rad dose in a mammogram and have silicone implants, it bounces off the implant, goes back into the breast tissue, and gives them a toxic dose of radiation that could cause breast cancer.
use a higher dose of radiation with breast implant people.
And they shouldn't, according to this peer-reviewed article.
No, and how many times did I have to get redone because the viewed wasn't just right?
Yeah, and there's an article that just came out in a European journal saying that actually they've shown that breast ultrasounds are more likely to show cancer than mammograms. And I don't know whether that's true or not, because I know there's some microcalcification stuff. But, you know, between ultrasounds, thermograms, and MRIs, I bet you can detect a lot of breast cancer that you don't have to do mammograms for. You can do mammograms if you use the right dose, if you have breast implants, but you need to lower the dose.
And
not do them real, and not do them all the time. I don't think they do either.
I mean, I can remember feeling a rip when I had a mammogram, and I think it would be like a mechanical closed capsulotomy, I guess that's what I would
Oh, it is. Well, I argue with radiologists all the time who tell me they don't rupture these implants. I said, look, when I take out an implant that's over, say, 12 years old, and the implant's intact but it's kind of greasy, if I just squeeze a little bit, just a little bit, no pressure hardly at all, much less than a mammogram, that implant will rupture. That shell is just really, really weak. And so I know mammograms. I don't think anybody with implants over 8 years old should get a mammogram for that reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because you get deathly ill once that ruptures. And a lot of women who come to me say when they felt that pop during the mammogram and then about a week later got deathly sick.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then was ruptured. But, you know, they deny it. They deny that they can rupture a mammogram. I've even had radiologists hang up on me, you know, just so completely sure that they were right and that someone like me who only does the surgery and sees the implants, you know, couldn't possibly be right. You know, I mean, it's like you're going to believe me or your lying eyes. That's what the fighter pilots used to say.
Well, like Walter Cronkite said, agendas exist. You need to use a big shovel to dig a little deeper for the unpadded truth. But it's there if you
start
taking the layers off the onion. You'll eventually, usually it's follow the money. In fact, it's always follow the money. But I think nowadays, we're never going to achieve a ban of implants, and I think we should. I feel I need to, and I have changed my position, and I'm into more of an educational.
Oh yeah, I do
women,
too. I mean, informed
make
consent
women
is so
more,
important.
Yeah, make them shun the idea of implants rather than trying to ban. Give them informed.
Well, if you give them informed consent, they probably will do okay. Avoid moldy places. Mm-hmm. Keep your immune system up. Do detoxification because chemicals do leak out. I mean, there's detox programs you can do. And women who are, you know, healthier diet, healthier supplement program do much better than women who drink, smoke, and don't do any detox program.
And then
change them out every 10 years, you know. That's and the implant companies are saying that now.
Well, do you think that eventually it's going to go to this stem cell fat transplant?
Yeah, I do too.
I honestly do.
It's a lot less expensive
and
than every 10 years changing them out.
Absolutely, and there's no foreign object going into the body, and it just makes so much sense.
It does.
Anyway, just because it makes sense.
I think that's true. I think that the future of implants is not as rosy as the implant companies would have us believe.
Mm-hmm.
But in any case, would you like to give some contact information for your book?
I sure would. www.thedirtcommittee.com is my website. You can order using PayPal or credit cards, and books are usually sent out the same day or within a few days. And I've put my all into this, and I hope that people who read it get out of it what they expect. I think it's a story that's not been told before, and just in the documents that I found, I just the lies, the bold-faced lies that are all documented, like all materials are subjected to extremely sensitive tests for tissue reaction and must show no tissue reaction to be accepted. I mean, statements like that.
Yeah, with
and
the
then,
animal
and
studies.
Then,
that's right.
Then the
showing
next
that
animal study. Then the CEO saying, euthanize the animals. Get rid of the organs out of the freezer. Get rid of it all.
I have another one,
you know. And so it makes for an interesting read just to know what goes on. I call it the WikiLeaks of breast implants is what
There you go. And I do want to mention also the book Informed Consent, which was written when the Dow Corning ethics director, his wife got deathly ill, and he tells
John tells an insider
story that people need to read as well if they want more specific information about what was covered up at Dow Corning, which was, of course, the main producer of the gel for the other companies. So this is really where you needed to go for the scientific information. The other companies just basically trusted the information Dow Corning was giving them.
Right.
So,
and I
that
talk
book
about
is very good.
Him and his wife in this book as
yes,
well.
Yes, you do.
And
I do too.
A
in my
short
book.
Form.
Do, right.
Yeah. And
right.
Because he's important. And his wife
he
said,
is.
"John, we could. I have to get like they were." Killing her. She was
yeah,
literally
she was
dying,
really
as
sick.
Were so
yeah.
many of us. And she said, we mm-hmm. can go somewhere. We don't have to tell anyone. We'll
right.
just do this quietly.
yeah.
And as the ethics director, mm-hmm. he ended up having to step away from Dow. And
yeah. Then he was accused of trying to bribe them by the yeah, that was
interesting. Oh, yeah.
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 It just goes on and on. I mean, it is just so, yeah. the corporate cover-ups, the corporate lies, it's just,
mm-hmm.
you have to understand corporations are there for their shareholders. They're not mm-hmm. there to protect their consumers. The FDA
right.
is run by the influences of these corporations. Mm-hmm. They are not there to protect the consumer.
Right.
Hopefully that'll change someday. Hopefully.
Just
I mean, hopefully somebody's going to understand karma does occur,
yeah.
okay? It does
okay.
occur. Karma
well.
is a universal law, okay? Not
uh-huh.
a local law. And I keep
well.
Reminding people of that you know,
yeah.
what goes around comes around. And that is something that, of course, they're not aware of, or they would never engage in such heinous crimes against the people that they are supposed to protect.
Absolutely.
But it's. I do want to mention one more thing.
Sure.
We Plasticos is going to be on Monsters Inside Me on
right.
Animal Planet. I think it's coming up in the next week or two in the U.S. It was already on Discovery UK, and if you just want to watch mm-hmm. it online, it's www.discoveryuk.com. Go to Monsters Inside
uh-huh.
Me and then look for the Catherine Gordon segment. Catherine was, of course,
Catherine
featured
Gordon.
In Glamour
okay.
Glamour Magazine and Vanity and Sanity in Canada. Do you watch Vanity and Sanity? Is that show still on?
No, but I have seen Monsters Inside Us advertised as an upcoming special.
Yeah.
So I get
Parasites.
The US channel.
Yeah, it was Parasites last year, but this year it's Mold. So that's what they're featuring Mold. And
okay.
the directors of that segment were absolutely flabbergasted that mold could grow in breast implants. They told me that was so amazing to them. And they love being in the operating rooms there. But the ORs in the thing aren't my ORs, but they love filming me in the mm-hmm. OR. But in any case,
Pierre
Blais
sent me Pierre Blais sent me 7 implants the other day.
Mm-hmm.
So when I do a book signing, I have each one
the
of them are in a sterile little bag. But so people
right.
can, you know, there's a ruptured
yeah.
one, there's one full of mold,
yeah.
there's, you
right.
know, there's one
right.
with a patch, there's one with a valve,
yeah.
and so people can
see it, which is important.
In real time, can see it, not just
yeah.
imagine in their mind what it
yep.
might feel and look like.
That's right.
And
that's
the mold,
right.
it makes you gag a little when you think
yeah, it
that
does.
That goes
it
through
does.
Our bodies.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen mold in the pericardial infection around the heart with mold,
yeah.
black mold. Yeah,
mm-hmm. Well,
yeah, I've seen it all.
I'm sure you
it's
have.
It's amazing. It's just amazing.
And do
well, we're coming up. We're coming up to the end of our hour, so I want to thank you very much for joining us today, Gail. It's been a lovely conversation. We've ventured into a few things that haven't been said on air before, and
mm-hmm.
But I want people to understand that this is the degree to which the cover-up might have gone. And I'm not saying that Bristol-Myers hired an assassin, okay? I'm not saying that.
I know.
No, I'm not.
I know.
I'm not. I want to make that very clear. And you're not
mm-hmm.
saying that, you know, the batches were, you know, different because they threw handfuls of stuff in. This is just stuff we've heard. This is hearsay. This is not us saying that. But there
mm-hmm.
are plenty of examples where corporations did their level best to destroy the careers, to destroy evidence, to destroy whatever they could to keep making money.
And
it is all in a dirt committee, so read the book.
It is, and it's documented, and it's referenced properly, and
that's
it's
right.
legally exposed. So please visit my site, www.thedirtcommittee.com, and I thank you so much, Dr. Kolb, for having me here
it's
today.
Been great.
I appreciate it so much. So,
all righty. Well, this is Dr. Susan Kolb with Temple of Health Radio Show. Next week, we have Let's see. Well, we don't have that one. We have another one. We have Galactic Alignment 2012 and Beyond. I interviewed Tricia McKinnon already on this. That's next week. That's a fabulous episode on the energies coming in, hopefully causing enough spiritual growth that this corporation defect will be eliminated. On the 20th, I have Spiritual Growth with Ethnogen, Psychoactive Sacraments, and Human Transformation. On the 27th, Cindy Bentley, Celestial Being, How to Shift to Fifth Dimensional Living. Noetic Science is given on the 18th at the Dunwoody office. Ron Amana is giving a lecture on the science of Hindi. He's actually a physicist who is taking ancient Hindu text and describing spiritual science that comes out of those texts that is actually becoming obvious today, the dimensional shifts, that sort of thing. It should be a great lecture. And then we have a free Millennium Healthcare event, Finding the Best Supplement and Vitamin, by Dr. Brad Gould, our holistic integrative family practice doctor. That's on the 22nd at 7 p.m. at our Dunwoody office. Again, thank you so much, Gail, for joining us. It's been a great conversation and one that I'm passionate about, as you know, and we hope to have you on later on. We'll have you on again in 2013, and you can update us with what you've learned since then.
Okay. Thank you again, Susan.
Take
Bye
care.
Now.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye.